And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast on a Wednesday morning with NBA free agency approaching us. And I am thrilled to be joined for what has become an annual podcast, but first time with this guest, the great Brian Windhorst, our NBA insider, host of the Hoop Collective podcast, on your television sets across Earth all the time. Mr. Windhorst, how are you doing?
Hey, Zach, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you doing? Everything good? You ready for the silly season?
Yeah. So I was just reading some of our notes that the that our fine folks at our Stats Information Group came up with, and I remember very vividly in 2016, like July 1st through 3rd, there was a lot of people freaking out at some of these contracts. And I remember like NFL players were weighing in and, you know, and baseball players were weighing in. And the last couple of years has been a little bit of a bear market, but we could have an NBA player, or we could have, you know, soccer players and stuff weighing in, because we're going to see some huge money in the next week.
Yeah, it's one of the big questions of this offseason is what did we learn from the 2016 season? And I've actually spent some time talking to people about that and looking back at, you know, it's easy to find the deals that were bad. Like, we can all name them off now, right? The Lakers and the Blazers and the Bazemores and all these guys that signed Biombos and blah, blah, blah.
Batum.
But at the time, Batum was like, he took a discount to go. I mean, that was not considered a bad deal at the time. He was coming off a really good season. So were the Hornets. And he took significantly less than the max. They leveraged his early bird rights or their whatever they had on him to get him to do that, or his bird rights to get him to do that. And it wasn't considered, but like, it's more interesting to go back and find, like, what deals actually turned out well? Were there any? Were there any that were longer than 2 years that turned out well? That's an interesting thought exercise, but that's not the thought exercise we're here to do.
Right.
We both picked, by my fiat, our five most, our five most
interesting. It's a Dartmouth sentence.
Fiat. It's also a car. Our five most interesting free agency teams. There is no criteria. I don't really believe in criteria, Brian. I want the world to just make of it what you want. Our five most interesting free agency teams. I did this with Arnovitz last year, and I didn't want to overburden him because he was the AD trade reaction podcast victim that I assaulted last week. So you're up, and so I made you pick your five most interesting free agency teams. Totally open ended. Brian Windhorst, start at the top. Give me your most interesting NBA free agency team.
Okay, so how do you want to handle the New York teams and the LA teams?
Oh, that's right. I created a rule because, again, fiat. I'm a dictator on this podcast. We maxed out at you can only give combined two of your five slots to the four New York and LA teams. So you can't have all four of them in there. You can only have two. But I want to know who is number one.
Well, my number one most interesting team is without question the Lakers, because this offseason, here's what people don't seem to understand, I don't think. Rob Pelinka hasn't done his hardest work yet. His hardest work is how he's going to use this cap space that's right here. He overpaid in a trade for a player who only wanted to be in Los Angeles. That, you know, while I take my hat off to the Lakers for getting LeBron and Anthony Davis in back-to-back years.
I've never seen you wear a hat.
Yeah, I do sometimes when my hair gets long, okay. Which it is right now. But I'm going to get it cut today. So, I don't want to cheapen what they've done. They've gotten superstars in back-to-back summers. It's like one of the great accomplishments that you could ever have as a franchise, but it hasn't been because of shrewd management. It hasn't exactly been the Raptors have done. So he's really got to hit this mark. And I keep seeing over and over people saying, "Oh, they've got $23 million in cap space. They've got $23 million in cap space." I'm sorry, but they just do not have $23 million in space. They have a cap hold due to Reggie Bullock of $4.5 million. He's unrestricted. And Zach, in my mind, they have to re-sign him. Now, if we get to July 1st and, you know, Jimmy Butler or Kyrie Irving bat their eyes at the Lakers and they have to, like, go scramble and trade players to get to the max to try to get those guys, I guess you'd have to do that. But
yes,
way more likely is that the Lakers have to break this up into three or four players, and they will never get a player of Reggie Bullock's quality for $4.5 million. Now, that's not to say that he's going to make $4.5 million. He'd make more than that, but he'd count against them for $4.5 million until they sign him. So they absolutely have to have Reggie Bullock on the line, with an understanding. Like, it's almost like the most important first contract they have to negotiate. Because if Reggie Bullock, not that he's a July 1st free agent for a lot of teams, but if Reggie Bullock is out there and, agrees to a contract with, you know, the Indiana Pacers.
It's a good name. Good name right there.
On July 1st at, you know, noon, the Lakers will have just made a failure. And I don't mean to start this podcast out with Reggie Bullock, but it's more indicative of the way the Lakers have to think. They, in my mind, have to use this money on three players. They need to sign a player at, you know, 12 to 14 million. They need to sign a player at around what the mid-level would be, which is about 8, 9 million. And then they need to sign Reggie Bullock with that remaining 4.5 cap hold. They can exceed the cap. They need to hit, they need to make contact on all three of those picks, all three of those players. And then they need to use their mid-level, their taxpayer mid-level of what is it, 5.8 million. They need to use that on a player. Oops. So they need to have, they need to hit on those four players. And Rob Pelinka has got to be a stud on those signings. They're a little bit, Tim Bontemps, our colleague, we were talking the other day, and he said, you know, they're walking like the Grand Canyon tightrope here. Cause if they whiff on a signing, like they did on a lot of the signings last year, it sets them back a couple of years because there's no way out. There's no way to, you know, like, oh, we'll just draft a guy. We'll just flip a pick for a guy. We'll flip some of our young players for a guy. They just can't do it. So
no, they have that is part of the appeal of the split it up school of thought, is that you go from having literally no trade fodder at all to some pieces. Like it's like how the last couple of years everyone said, well, Marcus Smart's contract, that's a handy size, or Marcus Morris's contract. You're like, just having those sized contracts get you in the trade market if you need to get in the trade market, and you can't get there with picks because they're almost all gone, and you can't get there with other players because they all make the max and they're Kyle Kuzma, So you have nothing. You have literally have nothing to trade, and that would give you something to trade. Look, the cap space question, I guess we'll have it answered for us in time, right? Like, if a max player wants to go there and the Lakers want to open up the cap space, they will pull whatever levers are necessary to at least approximate that space if they can. I don't know if they can. It depends on Davis waving his trade kicker. Maybe it depends on the Pelicans doing this or that. I mean, we'll see. I don't know how many players that are in that salary ballpark, though, are actually worth it for the Lakers to go that route. Like, I don't know if Kemba Walker's worth it. I don't know that Chris Middleton's worth it. I don't know that Tobias Harris is worth it. I do know that Kawhi Leonard is worth it. A healthy Klay Thompson would be worth it. But the Lakers have to ask themselves, hey, look, we have no players. We have three NBA players on our team right now, and three other dudes who we may have to trade to open up cap space, and or three other dudes that have really not had any NBA experience. We need human players, and we just cannot, like, if we use our cap space on a guy who's going to be out till February at best or whatever it is, like, LeBron, the lesson of last year for LeBron and vis-a-vis Kawhi should be, like, it's time to cycle LeBron out onto a load management style timetable. I'm not saying 60 games, but not 82 and not 38 or 35 or 36 minutes a game. Like, you have to prepare for the LeBron endgame now. He's going to be third all time in the history of the world in minutes played by the end of next season. Not 10th, not 12th, not 20th. Third behind Kareem and Mailman, I think. That's it. Those are the only dudes ever to have played more minutes than LeBron James by the end of the season if he stays healthy. And so Clay would be interesting in that regard, but for the fact that he's going to be a zero until he gets healthy. He's a perfect fit. To me, the line of demarcation is Jimmy Butler, and I assume we're going to talk about him later. That's the blurry line, but the Lakers are on my list too. I had them number four on my most interesting teams. And one of the things that's depressing to me, Brian Windhorst, and you lived through this as an Ohio native, is every time I see J.R. Smith, I get shivers. When I see Carmelo Anthony rumors today, I get shivers, because it's like, how many times, you just, like, you can't go back to just what worked 5 years ago. You can't go back to like, oh, this worked. I like these guys. Bring them in. Like, this is how LeBron teams have managed in the past. And it, look, they got a championship in Cleveland. That was now 3 seasons ago. J.R. Smith didn't play last year. Carmelo Anthony essentially didn't play last year. I don't like it. Every time I see one of those names, I get the heebie-jeebies of like, they're going to blow. Now, those are minimum guys maybe at the end, so they're not the guys you're talking about. But I just like, they just can't, they can't even blow the minimum signings. That's how thin their margin of error is.
Right. That also assumes relatively good health for Anthony Davis and LeBron. Now, LeBron historically has had great health, and Anthony Davis the last 2 years has been relatively injury-free. He only missed a handful of games the last 2 years. But obviously their histories. This is why I don't believe that the Lakers will be at their best this year. They will need a full year to get on their feet. I've seen this. I saw it in Miami in 2010. And, you know, if you go back and look at the guys they were bringing in to fill out that roster, primarily because Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem both got hurt. But, you know, with all due respect to my man Big Cat, you know, Big Cat was getting minutes. Mike Bibby was getting minutes. Carlos Arroyo, Jerry Stackhouse. I could go on and on about the guys on that team. They cut Patrick Beverley. They had Patrick Beverley in training camp and cut him, and I was there for all of training camp. I don't even remember Patrick Beverley.
And then he went to the Ukraine, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was his next stop, but yeah, he got cut. But my point is, like, so you can laugh at J.R. Smith, but when we get down to the minimum, especially in a summer where there's a lot of cap space out there for guys, that's the type of players that they're going to have to fill out the roster with, which is why you have to hit.
I don't mind ending up on J.R. Smith for the minimum. I just don't want to start there. Like, let me search. Right. Let me not just like go reread the same book that I read 5 years ago. Let me like start broaden my horizons a little bit.
I will say that Heat team, remember, that was LeBron, Wade, and Bosh when they were in their 20s. I mean, they had a margin for error with those ancillary pieces that they were bringing in off the scrap heap. All due respect to my man Zydrunas Ilgauskas, etc.
What do you think of the Kawhi stuff? That, you know, the Lakers consider themselves in play for Kawhi. Maybe they'll get a meeting with Kawhi. I mean, if you can get Kawhi, obviously. He's arguably the best player in the NBA. Is that real to you, or is it still a two-team? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is it still
a two-team
race?
Well, yeah, in my mind, it's a two-team race. But every day that goes by, we see a different team that Kawhi is going to meet with. I mean, Woj reported that they're going to meet with the 76ers. He's going to meet with the 76ers. The Knicks are expecting to get a meeting. I don't know who reported this, but I saw that he might meet with the Mavericks. You know, and are these meetings, you know, 90-minute sessions at the Montage in Beverly Hills? Or is he having, like, meals with all these folks?
How about is he at them?
Yeah, that's what happened with LeBron in 2014. Rich Paul had the meetings.
Well, and last year too, right? Last year LeBron didn't meet with the Sixers. I don't believe. Remember that? Didn't they have some sort of phantom LeBron meeting that he wasn't there?
That's right. Yeah. The thing about last year and the one and the all time what if. I know this is our buddy Bill Simmons. He wrote that book with all time what ifs. The Denver Nuggets were just so desperate to get a meeting with LeBron last year. They just wanted 10 minutes to just try to convince him.
Look, I volunteer. If Kawhi doesn't want to attend any meetings, I will volunteer to represent Kawhi at meetings with other NBA teams. I will convey whatever. I'll just act as his representative. That would be fun. Just go around, wine and dine me, bring some beer.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Right. Yeah. You have brunch with the Sixers, lunch with the Mavericks, and dinner with the Lakers. It'd be fantastic. That's a day in LA right there.
I still think it's a two-team race, but you know what?
Me too.
What Stein said yesterday on Bill's podcast is true. Like, you want to pretend you know. You don't know. You don't know until the Nets don't know. All the noise about Kyrie, it's done, it's this and that. They don't know. You don't know until it's done. And the meeting I had in January with an NBA executive who said to me, listen, all of this buzz about who's signing where, wait until the playoffs are over. Because all these dudes are in high stakes playoff games, and what happens in the playoffs is going to be massively important in determining what happens in July. And that was one of the most, it's obvious, but it was one of the most prescient things anyone has said to me in the league. Don't worry about it. Wait to see how the playoffs unfold. And I feel like the same warning applies. And I was like, just like as done as it feels and as inevitable as it's a two-team race. It's been Raptors and Clippers. Like it's not done till it's done. And I think it's a two-team race? Yes. Am I reporting that? No. Do I know that? No, because you just don't know. You don't know what happens if he gets in a room with someone and things change. I don't, who knows?
Yeah, so I've in my free agency experience, which has largely been through the LeBron lens for all those years, free agency is like an NBA game. You would never declare a NBA game over, no matter what the score is in the second or third quarter. I don't care if it's 27 points. We've seen it. Free agency is the same way. And so that's the thing. Like, the Knicks made their trade of Porzingis essentially in the second quarter, to clear out the space. And Dolan was in there talking about how, yeah, we feel really great about free agency. That information could have all been accurate, but it's just like a game that's a 28 point game in the second quarter. That game is not over.
And you know what? If the Knicks strike out and the Clippers don't get Kawhi, one of the lessons of this year will be don't talk. Just don't talk. Because the Knicks are going to get crushed if they strike out, and Dolan is going to get crushed for coming out and stupidly saying, well, I've talked to the agents. Everything's going to go great for us this summer. And I remember telling people, like, can you get him off the radio? Pull him off. Get the big hook from the Muppet Show and pull him off the stage. But you can't because he owns the team. No one can tell him what to do. And the Clippers won't get crushed because they were more polite. But they went out in the media, too, and talked about all the great things they have to offer and all the big stuff that they had planned for this summer. And if they strike out on Kawhi, one of the lessons, just don't do that. Move in silence. Make your case on the court. Make your case in silence like some of these other teams are doing. Anyway, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
All right. Well, that's the Lakers. Now let's go to your
I'm going to go. We've both used one of our five slots and one of our two LA New York slots. Hiring used to be hard. You had to go through multiple job sites and stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, bam, all at once. And they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them proactively. You are doing no work during this process to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates. That's very handy. Again, they're doing the work for you. You never miss a match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers, 80%, who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day, day one. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free, literally $0.00 at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, LOWEPOST, the name of this podcast, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Brian Windhorst, the second most interesting free agency team on your list.
Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, your New York-LA allotment is over. The Nets did not make my list because I wrote about them yesterday, so I kind of cheated a little bit.
That was a good story.
I
feel like it was like what Nets fans are talking about on their group chats and their DMs and their text messages was like essentially what your story was yesterday.
So obviously all the reporting has been they have the inside track on Kyrie Irving. Durant's injury has thrown their alleged Durant has said it's not a package deal. I cannot be recruited anywhere. I am not a package deal with anybody. I am Kevin Durant. But it has thrown into some uncertainty any plans a team has to pair them up. And so the Nets are left now hoping, I think, to get Kyrie and then figuring out what do we do if we don't get Kevin Durant with them, et cetera. What makes them interesting to you? Why are they on your list?
Have you watched all of Kyrie Irving's Instagram in the last week or so?
I have not on Instagram, but someone tweeted an Instagram post that was from Kyrie yesterday. Now, I assume everything that's funny on the internet is now fake, and I'm just being duped by things. But it was another one of these things where all of the words were English, and they were all words, and the order in which they were put did not make any sense. Like you read the paragraph and it was like, okay, I don't know what that means. That's literally not a coherent paragraph. Now, if you rearrange some of the words, maybe it means something. So I don't, it was about peace and something. I don't remember what it was.
There was a video on there yesterday. Now, obviously he is, he's been in Japan and he's obviously filming some stuff for something. I don't know what it is. Some sort of thing, something he's getting paid for. So he's in Japan and he stopped in Seattle beforehand and saw his grandmother. His grandfather passed away during this last season. Kyrie has a complicated family. But anyway, he put a video on there yesterday, And it's some of him hanging out in Seattle, some of him commemorating his grandfather and his, seeing his grandmother. Some of it's him messing around in Japan on various things. Some of it's him, like, having, contemplating life at various places in Japan. Some of it's him making out with his apparent new girlfriend. Some of it's with playing with his daughter, going down a slide with his daughter. And there's this weird overlaying music and these weird overlaying voiceover. I have no idea what it's supposed to mean. It is absolutely all over the place. And it just reeks of somebody who has too much money and too much time. And I'm just like, this guy, like, you know, you hear about these teams hiring private eyes and, you know, doing extraordinarily deep background research and going to high school and finding their old girlfriends and talking to their grade school math teachers and all this stuff. We don't need to do that with Kyrie. His background research is right out there for all of us to see. Blaring red flags with the way this guy is, because I mean, bringing him to your team, you're going to be bringing this kind of personality. And you really went over this in your column yesterday where you were like, is this, how did you phrase it? You said you don't think he's got bad character.
He's volatile. Even some people on teams where he left a bad taste, and there's only two of them, will say, we don't think he's a bad, some people, we don't think he's a bad guy, but now you hear some people who might say worse things, but you know, that's why I said, I don't know if he's a poor character guy. He could just be a volatile, kind of unpredictable personality, which there are a lot of those in the world, and that's life. You have to deal with it.
And so the question that you investigated and the question that the Nets now must look at themselves and really discuss is the downside worth the upside? Are the days when Kyrie is out there and the days when Kyrie is making videos like this, but not actually making a video, but making that video, you know, in our locker room, you know, or in our huddle, are those downsides worth the upsides? And that's a complicated conversation. And the Nets are in a position where they can hedge because Russell's restricted. And that's one thing I'll say about all of free agency in general. Free agency, we used to think of it about cap space and fit. Cap space and fit are clearly still important, but now timing is very important. Now the order in which things happen is very important. So let's just look at D'Angelo Russell for a moment. And I know that Woj talked about this on your show last night. D'Angelo Russell either will be a restricted free agent or he won't be. And whether he is or not affects a lot of situations. So if the Lakers are interested in D'Angelo Russell, they would be great if Kyrie signs with the Nets on Sunday. But if Kyrie doesn't make up his mind until Tuesday or Wednesday, because he's waiting on Durant, let's say, the Lakers can't proceed. The Lakers can't live in a world where they don't know whether their cap space is available to them or not until July 8th. They just can't. Even if they think D'Angelo Russell is the greatest fit in the history of the planet, and even if he wants to be a Laker again and will wipe away all the Nick Young and Magic and all that stuff, like, they can't live in that world of uncertainty. So the one thing that the Nets have, which is why I think one of the most interesting teams, is they have a built-in hedge where they can sit there and deem whether it's worth keeping Kyrie while still holding their rights on D'Angelo Russell. And whether or not to them, as you described, taking Kyrie without Durant is worth it. Is taking Kyrie and all that comes with him, even though he's a better player than D'Angelo Russell, worth doing it? And it's a complicated situation. The other thing that they have is they have some young guys on their roster who they're going to have to pay. So while the Knicks, if the Knicks completely strike out in free agency, they can sort of roll their space over. They can sign guys to one-year contracts, kind of like the Lakers did. The Nets don't really have that luxury because they're going to have to pay some of these young guys on their roster coming up. And that makes this free agency the vital free agency for the Nets.
The Knicks thing is interesting. The if they strike out thing is interesting because Ian Begley was the first one to report this, our old colleague who is so plugged in there. And I think we've all heard the same subsequently, is that all their plans are if we don't get one of the top three or four guys, we're going short-term deals again. And one-year deals, two-year deals, whatever. And I think they would try to have a representative team doing that. I don't think they want to win 17 to 22 games again. I think they want to win something more than that and be competitive and representative. And I get that. I just don't know what the point of building that team on 1 and 2 year deals is, because you can, like, the Nets built a better team than that, a competitive 40 whatever win team. Okay. That has a pretty hard ceiling with the talent it has now, but it's a competitive, feisty, nice team. They can take that to free agent and say, hey, all these guys are on our team for as long as we want them. They're all our draft picks or guys that we've acquired under contract or guys like Spencer Dinwiddie who have been extended for several seasons. That's sustainable. The Knicks, if they do that 1 or 2 year deal route, even if they have they make a nice little team next year, they can't sell that. There's nothing to sell unless, well, now what they could sell is Dennis Smith gets better and Mitchell Robinson builds on what was a really good rookie year for him and all of this. But like, it's just, it's an interesting, the plan B being, we're just going to sit out free agency when there will be young players like D'Angelo Russell, or even Tobias Harris is not old. Tobias Harris is like 27. Available to us as backup plans, perhaps available to us as backup plans. Next year's free agency is not great shakes compared to this one. Like, I don't know what you're saving. I don't know what you're saving your money for, kind of. You know what I mean?
So, the Rockets have gotten through their, they've woken up from their stupor of like fighting with each other. Like, if I could draw like a cartoon, like the Rockets would be at each other's throats, and then they would look around and see like, Durant and Klay Thompson laying in hospital beds, and like the Lakers bus like only having three guys on it, and they could say, "Hey, wait a minute,
Chris Kaman could be laying back on the bench again."
Why are we fighting with each other? We might win the West next year. So I can see that they've come to that realization over the weekend. It seems like they, you know, PJ Tucker and Chris Paul are saying kumbaya, and you know, Harden's in China, and they're gonna send him a telegram or something. If the Rockets really do want Jimmy Butler, which I think would be insane in that locker room, but Daryl doesn't care about chemistry. Why wouldn't they just call the Knicks and say, hey, listen, if you're not gonna get Durant, you're not gonna get Kawhi, why don't we just send you Capella and Eric Gordon and a first round pick, and you can create the space for us? We don't need to do business with the Sixers.
Well, why don't we move on? Because the number one most interesting free agency team on my list was the Philadelphia 76ers. Were they on your list?
They were on my list, but they were further down. But go ahead.
So they were number one for me. And right off the bat, now we have a plot twist, and the plot twist is Houston appears to be incredibly serious about getting Jimmy Butler. Now, why that's interesting to me is, well, we can talk about it from whatever team perspective you want, but Philly has Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, and J.J. Redick, 3/5 of their starting lineup, which they believe is the best lineup in the NBA, are free agents. A lot of balls in the air. They could have anywhere from no cap room to like $50+ million or more in cap room. Like they could have Jimmy stays and they have $30 million in cap room. They could have Tobias stays and they have $38 million in cap. There's a million different ways this could go. To me, the simplest way it can go is the big takeaway from the playoffs to me about the Sixers, number one, they're really good. They're close to being a championship team now. Better than I thought. Better than the Raptors thought before that series. Better than anyone thought.
The Raptors will tell you that that was their hardest series. Now, granted, it was because the Warriors got hurt, but nonetheless.
Number two, when the going got tough, they did not trust Ben Simmons to run the offense. They stuck Ben Simmons in the dunker spot and said, okay, we're going to put you here, get some offensive rebounds, keep Kawhi out of the way because he's guarding you. Just go here. Jimmy Butler is our point guard now. I don't know how you go from that to doing anything but offering Jimmy Butler the 5-year max. So to me, the simplest explanation, the simplest outcome for Philadelphia's free agency is max Jimmy Butler. Tobias Harris becomes then an interesting question. Do you play with that 5th year and try to get him on a little bit below the max? If you do that, do you have a plan B if he says, well, screw you, I'm leaving? And then hope to use your bird rights on Redick one way or another. That has always been the most logical outcome to me. There's been noise about 25 different outcomes because they have so many balls in the air and so much optionality. But that's always been the most logical one to me. Houston has now thrown that into some degree of gray area. What is your – so you think Houston is going to be – would be crazy to do this? Do you think they're serious? How much of a threat is this to Philly?
I just have a very difficult time understanding Houston at times because they definitely restricted their spending last summer. Okay, I understand it. They had a lot of guys to pay, and there's a limit for any team. They did not use their mid-level exception, although when I say that, Tillman Fertitta and Darryl get frustrated because they did use it to like sign G League guys.
Oh, can you keep going? Because what I really want more than anything else in life is another Tillman Fertitta press conference where a bearded Daryl Morey looks like he is in a hostage video and is one step away from signaling to the camera, help, like mouthing help me. So I want one more video like that.
Well, I had some people in the league wonder if Washington had, since they were trying to steal every other GM under contract, whether they tried to steal Daryl Morey as well, seeing how that was going. They go from, look, we're not going to pay Trevor Ariza because we have to play Capella and we have to play Chris Paul. Okay, I mean, I understand it. They don't use their mid-level. Okay, you know, and then then in a year where Chris Paul's getting older by the day and they've got a chance, they spend a lot of assets during the season to get out of the tax. Tillman Fertitta says, I don't even know how we got out of the tax. That was a fluke. I was like, no, it wasn't a fluke. It was your GM making five different moves and using a first-round draft pick to get out of it. But then, you know, the season ends, and they, you know, have all these drama. Now Daryl is out there on the record saying, we're going to go into the tax. No problem. We're going to spend the mid-level. We're going to go into the tax. And I'm like, oh, okay. But by the way, midway through last season, after they were making all those moves to sort of weaken the team and get under the tax, then midway through the season, they offer four first round picks for Jimmy Butler.
And bad salary too. So four for bad first round picks and bad salary. But as I said about the Lakers, any first round picks that far out are dangerous. I don't care who you have on your team. They're dangerous.
Fair. But if you traded for Jimmy Butler and you gave those four first round picks for him, it would be with the understanding that you were going to sign him.
Yes.
And therefore, you were looking at exploding into the tax anyway.
Much like the Tobias Harris argument for the Sixers. Well, we gave up Landry Shamet, our draft pick,
right,
the Heat pick. Well, we have to sign him. We can't pay that price and not bring him.
But I'm saying, like, I was having a hard time seeing what their focus was. Is their focus to control costs, or is their focus to go all out? So, you know, then again, now we have them, you know, trying to go all out again. So it's hard for me to predict what they're going to do. But I do know that Daryl goes big game hunting. That's one thing that we can say for sure. And he's been rewarded by it. He's bagged some big game. In fact, his daughter has a documentary now. She's a film student and she's got a document. I haven't got a chance to see it. But
it's 9 minutes long, Daryl told me. So I'm going to watch it one day because that's got to be a cool feeling as a parent, by the way. Your daughter goes off to NYU film school. New York is scary, man. You're a teenager coming to New York. That's a big, big city. You make a film. That's cool. Good for her.
And it's on the it's on the Harden trade.
I hope Simmons is in it. Maybe she got to interview Simmons.
Did Sam Presti do a sit down for this documentary? That's what I want to know. That would have been awesome.
I'm leaving that alone.
I know. I'm sorry, Sam. Now I'm going to get another call. All right. So I don't know what their focus is, but I mean, one thing I would say is, so I was with the Knicks during their draft last week. It was wonderful. You guys were all going crazy on all these trades and all this nonsense and Michigas in the top 10. The Knicks were just sitting back in their chairs going, yeah, we're going to take RJ. And if there's a crazy trade in front of us with Memphis, we'll freak out. But we're going to take RJ. We're rejecting all phone calls. We're taking RJ.
By the way, RJ Barrett currently, assume he's not signed yet, but is the highest paid New York Knick. And this for now. And the second highest paid New York Knick is Joakim Noah on the stretch provision, which is my favorite.
Oh my God.
Is my favorite current thing.
You need to do in a column the whole stretch provision team because Josh Smith is still getting paid.
Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders is still getting paid. Luol Deng eating up Lakers cap space.
Spencer Hawes.
Oh my God, Spencer! See this? Don't rob it. That's a good. Your last column before Croatia.
Oh baby, it's coming! It's coming.
But my feel from the Knicks is, they will use their space to take on players, but they're only going to do it for players that they think are useful to their group. In other words, they're not just going to warehouse a player that they don't have use for. So the name that they sort of floated, the idea was like what they did with DeAndre Jordan last year. So, you know, DeAndre Jordan came in and he was a filler in that trade to make the trade work to send Porzingis and Hardaway out and everything. But they felt that there was value in having him there. So while Wes Matthews got bought out, they wanted DeAndre around their team. So they've got $70 million in space. They are compelled to spend the overwhelming majority of it just to get to the floor. They got to spend, what, $60 million of it to get to the floor?
A lot. The floor is 90% of the cap, which means it's going to be almost $100 million.
Okay.
Right?
So, I mean, they don't have to spend it all in July. They can spend it during the season, sure. Obviously. But sure. That makes the Knicks, you know, if the Knicks don't get Durant, it makes the Knicks incredibly opportunistic. And if you're the Rockets and you have a bunch of stuff on your roster that you don't want and you're willing to move off firsts. And look, some of those players that they want to move are quality players.
They're
Eric
good.
Gordon's a quality player.
Eric Gordon's really good.
Clint Capella is on a good contract. I mean, why wouldn't somebody call the Knicks? If somebody wants to, like, if somebody's in jail, like, I don't think the Heat could get bailed out because the Heat have Jimmy Butler aspirations too.
They sure do. I'm glad you said that.
The Heat would love to get their hands on Jimmy Butler. I don't see how it's happening. They elected not to. I was keeping an eye to see, you know, they had the 13th pick in this draft, which was kind of squishy. Now I'm sure they're really excited about the kid they drafted from Kentucky and they think he's headed to the Hall of Fame. But I was wondering I kept my ear to the ground on if that pick was available to offload players. It wasn't. So I don't think there's as much in demand, although I will say that those contracts, the problem with those contracts that the Heat have is they're all multiple years longer. They would be in so much better shape if they had signed all of those guys to 1 year less. Even if they made the exact same mistakes on those signings, if they had just signed James Johnson to 3 years and Deion to 3 years, it would have been so much different. But okay, it's either here nor there.
Yeah, if everyone picks up their player options for 2021, I mean, they will. JJ, $16 million, Olynyk, $14 million, Deion, $12 million, Josh Richardson, great contract, $11 million, Justice Winslow pops in at $13 million.
Look, when I was
whatever I just did is a lot.
When I was a kid and being taught the NBA, I was taught that the only guys who get player options are guys like Tim Duncan and LeBron James. You don't give player options. Now everybody and their brother gets them. You know, but you don't give player options to James Johnson. That's how I was taught.
Did you go to like NBA school? Who's teaching
you? Yeah, I did. What do you think I was doing my first 4 years, 5 years in the league as a mindless beat writer wandering around?
You made it sound like you were like 8 years old and it was a special school for future NBA reporters that you were going to.
You know, by NBA terms, I was a toddler. You know, I had no clue like what all those rules were when I came in. I had to go to like seven summer leagues and meeting with agents and GMs and stuff like that who had to hold my hand and explain to me the rules of the league. I remember I went to the first ever Vegas summer league, Zach. It was like seven teams there. They filled the stands with kids coming from summer camp because nobody else would come.
Yeah, now I have buddies coming up for summer league, and they're like, do we need to buy tickets? Yeah. I'm like, if you want to see Zion game one, you might want to get a ticket.
It was, forget about the Thomas and Mack Center was sealed off. Forget about that building. We were in the auxiliary gym, and Warren was selling popcorn. Warren LeGarry was pretty much selling the popcorn. He was practically officiating the games. It was such a shoestring operation when it first started. And I was over in the corner being educated on what base year compensation was. So back when I learned the game, you didn't give player options out to players who weren't like super megastars. They didn't get those choices. Now they throw them out at the airport when the guys get off the plane. All right. So my point is if Houston really wants to get involved in this, why not call New York? And send all their guys to New York and open the cap space and not even have to deal with Philly. on well, Jimmy
Houston,
Butler move.
Houston, and if, look, I have no idea if Jimmy Butler is interested in this. No clue. I wish I could report that I knew. I don't have that information as of now. If there is mutual interest in making this happen, if this becomes his number one priority.
Well, he's from the Houston area.
I understand. What they need is a third team. Not only they to take stuff, maybe, but they also need the threat of Jimmy Butler walking to Team Y to actually make Philly cooperate in this. Because Philly has no incentive to do anything to help Houston. But if Jimmy Butler says, hey, look, you can sign and trade me here and get stuff, or I'm walking over here, then it becomes real. And maybe the Sixers just say, go walk over there. We don't want the stuff back. We're fine bringing back Tobias and bringing back JJ or filling our cap space with Plan C or whatever it is.
Or they could want Eric Gordon and Clint Capella. I mean, maybe not Capella, but they could want Eric Gordon.
And also you nailed this when you were talking about the D'Angelo Russell stuff. The timing of all this is so interesting. Like, if the Sixers on 6:01 p.m. Sunday say, hey, Jimmy, here's the 5-year max. Sign it. Let's be done. And he says, that's cool. I really appreciate that. I'm going to go take some meetings for the next 3 or 4 days. Oh, does Philly just hold up its business and say, okay, you do that? Wow. Do they start to get antsy? If Kawhi wants to go to the Clippers, we'll see, right? They're considered a real threat. But he wants another star, whoever it is, to go with him. And he communicates that to that star. But then he says, hey, star B, you know, I just want to meet with the Raptors again and the Lakers and the Knicks and the Nets. And just give me a couple days. Does Star B wait a couple days? Well, what does Star B's team do in those couple days? The timing of all this and the sequencing of it is like the art of free agency.
Right, because there's a line of demarcation. There's a certain amount of players who are going to be tied to waiting for the stars. But then there's another set of players. Like are the Morris brothers waiting around for Kevin Durant? No. You know, I don't think. I mean, the Morris brothers get good offers on Sunday night. They're taking those offers, I would think.
The more you think, the more I join up after this years of exodus from each other. Do you think that they join up? So, and how overpaid? And B, how overpaid will they be?
Well, they were vastly underpaid. You know, they, as you well know, they group negotiated the last deal. Marcus Morris was completely underpaid. He was on a $20 million 4-year deal. Markeith got a little bit more. He got 32, I think it was. Marcus needs to get paid. And so he has earned it. He is a very desired commodity in the market. Markeith, I actually like Markeith a lot, but he had an injury prone year last year.
He's had a rough couple of years. I think Marcus Morris is one of my prime, when the contract figure comes out, one of my prime, is going to be my reaction when I see the contract. Ooh.
Yeah. Marcus, go get your money, man.
No. I hope he had a great year last year until the shooting kind of fell off the wagon a little bit. But, like, he's a good player. I'm just saying, like Evan Turner is a pretty good player. The contract still made me go, ooh. Kent Bazemore is a good player. Ooh. So the Sixers, a fun thought exercise. If they get cute with Tobias Harris, everyone thinks, well, he's just going to go walk into a max offer somewhere else. Perhaps it only takes one team.
I talked to a team about this yesterday. I said, is Tobias Harris a max player?
Well, that's a loaded question, because that could be is he going to get the max or is he worth it?
Right.
So the answer that you get is, did you get yes?
I got probably not.
So it's become a de facto yes. Utah going out by getting Conley took away one place. So who's it going to be? Here are the cap room teams. Indiana. Well, they just got TJ Warren from the Suns for some reason.
Indiana's on my list, by the way.
They're on my list too. Great, a mutual list.
We'll get to them in a minute.
Dallas has Luka and Porzingis, and Luka's a 3.5 kind of player, like a 3 or a 4. Porzingis, they seem to have some interest in playing him at the 4. Sac has a bunch of 3s and 4s now. Harrison Barnes is going to play both. Bealitsa is going to play 4. Bagley's going to play 4. The Knicks, we don't know what they're going to do. Brooklyn, I think there would be some mutual interest there, but Brooklyn has plans A, B, and C before. New Orleans, don't see it. Boston, don't see it, but maybe Utah's like, I don't know what the Tobias Harris team is that
is
sitting
there. This is what I was talking about. Brooklyn, if they punt, right?
Maybe the most likely one.
Brooklyn, if they punt, and New York, but the New York has sent the vibe out that they're not going to sign second-tier free agents. They only want the cream of the crop. Is Tobias a second-tier free agent? I don't know.
I do, yes. Right. I mean, Tobias is a good player. But the tier to me is like, first tier is, am I totally fine giving this guy the max? Is he going to play up to this contract or outplay it? Second right. tier is he going to get the max and I'm not going to feel awesome about it? And Tobias Harris falls into that. Chris Middleton falls into that. Like, I'm just not going to feel like those guys, well, maybe they play up to the contract, but they're going to, like, I'm not going to feel awesome about it.
I've been calling them the A plus free agents and then the A free agents. And, they don't want to insult
and Jimmy
anybody.
Butler is sitting in between those tiers. Jimmy Butler is the most interesting one to me. And Kemba maybe. Kemba maybe too are the ones that are like hovering in between.
To me, those guys are the A free agents, not the A plus free agents.
Okay.
And I don't even think Middleton is an A free agent. I think he's sort of an A minus free agent. Here we are trying not to insult people.
Anything more on Philly before we move on?
So the thing with Philly is, to me, this decision probably has been reached a while ago. It's either 5 years or not with Jimmy. And I think if you don't offer the 5 years, you are essentially admitting that he's going to leave.
And I think the full 5 years, I take that to mean not, oh, we'll give you the 5 years because we can offer you we're the only one that can offer you five, but in exchange, we're not going to get you the max. I think you got to come with the full thing.
This was the Al Horford situation from last time around with Atlanta, where they offered five, but not the full max. And they could look everybody in the eye and say, we offered Al more money than anybody. But Al could say, yeah, but you didn't offer me the max. So that's one of those. The other thing is, one of the things that's been interesting, and I think you're the person to correct this, actually, because you sort of set so much of the tone. When you talk to agents and players and even teams, they use the word max. He's going to get max. He has to get max. But there's two maxes. There's max dollars and max years. So when I hear, oh yeah, Philly's got a max Jimmy. Well, I go, I know they're going to offer him the maximum salary, but are they going to offer him the maximum years? And the word max gets thrown around too much. You need to come up with a new verb, or not a new verb, but you need to come up with new verbiage. You need to come up with a new term for the, 5 year max and max that can be just thrown around, because I get confused in conversations sometimes.
People, are your feet aching after a long day? Are they not smelling so great either? That's a problem. You can't have that. You can't go through life like that. Try new fatigue-reducing insoles from Odor Eaters. They give you serious foot support with MVP-level, Giannis-level odor control. The shock-absorbing gel pad and contoured shape provide excellent comfort to minimize fatigue. It's nice to not be fatigued. Plus, with the power of Odor Eaters, they can tackle the toughest foot odor. Pick up a pair today at Walmart, Target, or other fine retailers. And don't forget Odor Eater sprays and powder. Fatigue-reducing insoles, real foot support, plus the best in odor defense from Odor Eaters. So between Philly, Indiana, Lakers, Nets, we've revealed 4/5 of your list. Just out of curiosity, who's the team we haven't revealed?
New Orleans.
I'm not interested in them. I'm interested in them, but they're not on my list. Let's do Indiana. It's funny that we both have Indiana on our list, and I think we should. Indiana's interesting. Why is Indiana on your list?
All right, let me see here. I have them. No, I say I mean Bobby Marks has them with $33 million in space left,
not including Bogdanovich cap hold.
Right. So to me, Bojan Bogdanovich is a very interesting player. I think he should be on the Lakers list, quite frankly. I have heard 0.0 of that. Because he can shoot and he can play defense.
He also owns a very good restaurant and boutique hotel in Dubrovnik, Croatia, trivia.
Is that right?
Yes, I ate at it last year. It was nice.
Oh, lovely. So I've heard the Spurs attached to him, but as yet the Spurs do not have salary cap space. I heard the Spurs attached to him a month ago. And so I've been sort of had my hands folded and saying, waiting for that Spurs move to open up space. Haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
So he's a Spursy player, don't you think?
A little bit. The Spurs are kind of a sleeping giant is too strong, but they're sneakily interesting with some good young players who could move at value, but I don't think they want to move any of them. And two stars who I think for the right deal you could get. But well, I don't know that they're going to.
The thing with the Spurs is DeRozan is extension eligible this summer. And what are they going to do about that?
Not extend him? I'm guessing.
Okay, and then
that's a guess, to be clear.
Okay, what does that mean then?
I don't know. I think if they could find, look, this is just my speculation, to be 100% clear. I'm guessing that if the Spurs could find a DeMar DeRozan trade that they like, they would do it because that's what they should do. Their team as currently constructed is not going to win, even in a wide open Western Conference that, by the way, other teams are going to reload around them. I think they should explore what they could get. I don't know if they will, but I think they should.
Yeah. Well, they have DeJounte Murray coming back, and that's going to be interesting to see how good he is because he was showing huge promise before the injury. All right. So Bojan, so to me, when TJ Warren got moved, which by the way was a very interesting trade, but because it happened 15 minutes before the draft and 9 minutes before there was two other trades in the top 10, including another deal involving Phoenix, like I don't think everybody paid a lot of attention to that, but Indiana going that route, kind of maybe indicated that they might be moving on from Thaddeus Young.
I think they are going to move on from Thaddeus Young.
Thaddeus Young becomes an interesting free agent. I wonder what his market's going to be. So Indiana couldn't pay everybody. That was kind of clear. There's now been pretty significant reporting about Rubio being an option there. And, you know, Indiana likes to give out these two-year contracts if they can. That's kind of all these guys who are coming as free agents this summer are guys they had signed to 2 year contracts. Collison, Bojan, who else did they sign to a 2 year deal that I'm forgetting?
Tyreek Evans, or was he a 1 year deal? Obviously, he's gone.
We've seen the last of Tyreek. He's on a different 2 year deal. That is completely different. Anyway, like I could see Rubio being a 2 year deal option for them, but
2 years,
to me,
30, something like that. And those 2 year deals, they're kind of, this is what I mean by with the Knicks. Like there's the one or two year deals where you get a discount or you get a really good deal and it sounds great. It's like when Atlanta got Millsap for 2 years, $19 million. Oh, it's a great deal. And then they get to the end of the contract. Boy, I wish this were longer. 2 years, 30, 2 years, a little at a figure like that. You set yourself up so that whatever limited version of bird rights you have on that guy is enough. Like he's a 15. It's enough that you can keep his cap hold on the books and keep him if you want. So I like that deal structure for
a lot
of teams.
Well, remember way back when David West on a 2 year deal coming out of the lockout, right?
Yeah.
That was like, that's how because here's the thing. At the end of the day, Indiana is just never going to be able to play in the big leagues in terms of spending. Maybe they could have 1 year where they would go, but it's just not going to happen under that ownership. It's just not there. I think they were like 23rd or 25th in spending last year. They're not going to be 18th next year. They're going to be 23rd, 25th. So they have to be careful.
Or lower.
But, Kevin Pritchard is shown to be very competent under those limitations. And I think he's looked at his hands and he goes, okay, we'll get TJ Warren. And he is a guy who I know how much he's going to cost me for the next 2 years. I don't have to get into a bidding war for him. And so I think, you know, Rubio is a guy who maybe he's not the greatest fit in the history of the world, but maybe they can get him on that 2 year deal. And so I think, you know, maybe they're lining up to pay Bojan. But that's the guy they've chosen maybe that they want to pay.
I think they absolutely want to keep Bogdanović. If you keep his cap hold on the books, they're down to $22 million-ish in room, which then becomes interesting because they need a point guard and I think they would also like another wing shooter. And so I don't know that you can get both or they're going to have to shop in a market that's a little discounted for one of them. Rubio, all the noise is out there. I don't love the Rubio thing. I don't love it. I don't love him next to Oladipo. I don't love him playing I don't love him playing next to Sabonis and Turner, who, as of now, it appears that they're going to try to start those two guys together and
see how
it works.
That's right.
You think so too? Okay. I just don't love that fit. The guy
has to sign Sabonis this summer too. By the way, well, when you figure in their long term plan.
He's extension eligible.
Which they have to extend him, I think.
And they drafted Goga, which sent shockwaves through the league because they already have two centers. They're going to try and play them together. and now they have another guy. Does that indicate anything for the future? We'll see. I love Brogdon for them. If Oladipo comes back healthy, and I don't remember the exact timetable on him, I love the Brogdon fit. I'd rather get Brogdon than Rubio. There are concerns about Brogdon's foot. I think that's well documented. But I like that fit better than Rubio, because with Brogdon, I get both a point guard and a wing shooter in one fell swoop.
I think the Chicago Bulls are lining that sucker up.
Even after drafting White.
I do.
Well, look, the Bucks, if that number gets to 20, the Bucks will just have a decision to make, because they just can't pay Brogdon, Lopez, and Middleton what it's going to cost and duck the tax.
They can. It's just a matter of whether they will.
Of course they can. I'm just saying the tax limbo becomes, now you can play with Ilyasova, maybe you dump him. It just becomes functionally, if Lopez gets, let's say, 14, Brogdon gets 20, Middleton gets 32.7, which is the max. The math is just the math, and it becomes very hard. I don't know what they're going to do. I do think they have a walkaway number on Brogdon, but maybe it's going to end up being, maybe the market for Brogdon won't materialize. I don't know. There's a lot of big numbers being thrown around about who's going to offer Brogdon. Chicago has more than 20 in cap room. They could throw it all at Brogdon, as you're suggesting they might. That number, maybe the Bucks just say, hey, look, we're championship contenders. 20 will do. 24, 22, 25. Maybe there's a number somewhere where the Bucks are not going to match. I think that's my educated reporting. I think there is a number they won't match, but maybe they just, when it's go time, maybe that number ends up being higher than the Bucks think it is now. Maybe when it's go time, they say, you know what, 23, if that's what it's going to take, let's do it.
Well, one thing to point out. So Giannis is now going to be supermax eligible. And of course, everyone's so focused on whether he signs the extension or not. But now that he's supermax eligible next summer, if they get him to sign that contract, they're looking at paying him, I'm projecting it out, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 36 to 38 million, 2 years from now, because he'll get the 10-year number. I don't know off the top of my head where the cap, I know that the cap is supposed to flatten after next year. But you can't ignore that number. Because, you know, if you sign all these guys, okay, you sign Middleton, you sign Brogdon, you've got Bledsoe, you're starting to worry about, are we headed for big time problems in 2 years? And do you worry about 2 years from now? Do you say, all right, we won't worry about it because if worse comes to worse, we'll just offload Brogdon or we'll just offload Bledsoe? But that number that's going to be the supermax for Giannis is going to be a huge number.
I think you worry about it later. I think you cross your fingers that those guys have trade value. It's just all about Giannis, and maybe Giannis doesn't care. Maybe Giannis is like, Brogdon, go get paid. I don't care if we'll figure it out. We have a point guard. I have faith in the front. Like, we'll play Connaughton more. We'll find another George Hill. We'll do whatever. Maybe he doesn't care. If he doesn't care, fine, whatever. But like, their number one priority has to be, we absolutely cannot do anything to irritate this guy. He is the franchise. He's the new arena. He's the big area that they're trying to make into the deer version of Jurassic Park is. He's everything. He's the whole thing.
Don't you think they could have had a better name for that? I mean, it was cool to see during the conference finals. Couldn't you come up with a better name than Deer Park?
I just made that up. Is that what it is?
That's what it's called, I'm pretty sure.
Antler Avenue?
It's even better.
Bucks Block?
Even still better. Corny, but still better.
Yeah.
So in terms of Indiana, by the way, Darren Collison would be a good fit for the Lakers, I think.
I would kind of – the interesting thing about Rubio and going that route, you have to and potentially renouncing Collison, it's like they're almost playing a challenge – they're almost like executing a challenge trade with themselves. Like, they have a status quo that's pretty good that they can just keep, and they're going to chase this other thing. Darren Collison's good, and he's a much better shooter than Rubio. It's an interesting little game.
I looked up Collison's shooting numbers. I forgot that he pretty much led the league in 3-point shooting 2 years ago.
Now he's too choosy, and he takes a long time to load that sucker up. But he can shoot.
He only shot 2.5 a game last year. But if you're the Lakers, guess what? Go spot up, sir. You can be choosy all you want because the ball's going to be coming out of double teams with LeBron and Anthony. You can follow your nails while you're waiting for it over there. So I mean, I think Collison would, I mean, I don't know what his number, what number he wants. He was just, I think, on a 2-year, $20 million deal. I'm sure he'd like a raise from that. I sort of see him as the second for sure.
The Lakers are going to look at him. That's going to be a name that is on the Lakers plant, not max free agent list. Indiana's really interesting. Okay, so rapid fire. By the way,
New Orleans, real quick, since you're going to dismiss them.
Go. I'm interested. They have $30 million in space, so I'm curious to see what they do. I just feel like they've done so much. What about Al Horford?
New Orleans, Al Horford.
Stein, just literally as you're saying this, tweeted that it's not New Orleans.
Oh.
Who knows?
Well, I don't look at Twitter all the
time. I'm worried about smoke screens this summer more than ever before. So I have inklings where Horford's secret team might go, but I don't have faith in my inklings. I don't have a lot of faith in what's put out there. I think there's some shenanigans. Not shenanigans. We'll see what happens with Horford. Listeners, you know I like anything that can save me time, and SeatGeek has emerged as the go-to time saver for buying tickets to anything, NBA playoffs, any other sporting event, concerts, comedy shows, Broadway shows, more. SeatGeek has all the tickets you're looking for. It searches the entire secondary market almost and puts it all in one place that's super easy to use. It rates every deal on a scale of 1 to 10. It has green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It has an interactive seating map so you know exactly where your seat is, whether anything's in the way, all of that stuff. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It is by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. They help me get tickets to Hamilton, which is a tough ticket to get. SeatGeek will, for now, even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use the promo code I'm about to tell you about. You got to download the SeatGeek app, use promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase on SeatGeek. The two teams on my list that we didn't get to are Sacramento. Yes, that's right, Sacramento. And the Clippers.
Please don't steal from my notes column later this week about Sacramento.
Okay.
Please.
I won't say anything more about the Kings then.
No, you got to do what you got to do. I'm just teasing you.
No, I don't care. But look, the Kings have $30 million in cap room. They have, and that's including Harrison Barnes cap hold. Cauley Stein is not going to be there. They need a center. You can put some dots together.
You don't think they actually renounce him, do you?
Cauley Stein?
Yeah.
Well, I think they would, yeah.
Well, they would if they would need the space, but like his agent, Roger Montgomery, came out to Sacramento Bee and said, hey, could you please renounce my guy?
Well, this is restrictive. I'm sure there are other restricted free agents.
I know. It's just
who would like that to happen. That's just not the rules.
Every year at the agent summit, you know, there's not really an official agent summit. Actually, I think they do have meetings.
I think they do, yeah. I think they just had it.
Do you think they have a like a panel discussion? All right, folks. Let's come up with this year's best. Let's brainstorm the best chances to get out of restricted free agency. That's like the biggest thing the agents have to do is the song and dance and maneuvers and threats and.
Well, Terry Rozier went on Get Up. I think it was Get Up and just like went scorched earth on the Celtics. That was, I think, his way of saying, hey, let me out there.
Is Seinfeld references are, you know, too old for your audience? Do you think?
No.
Seinfeld's
on 24 hours a day.
I know, but I'm telling you, the millennials don't watch it. They have no idea what you're talking about when you bring up Seinfeld to them. I'm sorry.
I am not going to generalize about the millennials, Brian.
George Costanza's trying to get fired by the Yankees so that he can go work for the Mets. And he drags he puts the World Series trophy behind his car and drags it around the parking lot and says, he gets the megaphone and yells at Steinbrenner, I fear no reprisal. You know, that's like what restricted free agents, that's like what Terry Rozier was doing. He took John Havlicek's jersey and, you know, Bill Russell's, you know, memorabilia, one of their Larry O'Brien trophies, and was dragging it around the parking lot begging, please do not keep me.
Doesn't George eat like strawberries and wipe his hands on Babe Ruth's jersey? Like you can do literally the equivalent of that, where there's plenty of old jerseys in Boston.
Right, exactly.
So I won't. All right, I'm going to move off Sac. They got to do Buddy Hield's extension, etc. I'll let you do Sac in your notes, Colm. Clippers, the reason the Clippers are on my list, and we can end with a rapid fire take on this. The question to me that hasn't been answered about free agency is, what is plan B for the Clippers if Kawhi is not going there? So I put that to you. What is plan B for the Clippers if Kawhi is not going there?
Okay, let's go with timing here, right? Let's talk about Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley is an interesting situation. He has not made a lot of money in his career. The contract that he is just coming off of, in a time when guys were getting overpaid, he didn't get paid. Daryl Morey pulled off one of those contracts that he pulls off. By the way, as a quick aside, Daryl has been more inventive with contracts than he has been with analytics. That's my hot take.
Interesting.
Daryl's been way more the Rockets have been way more innovative with contracts. They have changed the entire way the league does contracts. With their 4-year stuff, the Chandler Parsons thing.
And the draft poison. Picks and the reverse protected draft picks, I believe.
Reverse protection draft picks, the poison pill with Jeremy Lin and Omer Asik, and the contract that they got Beverly to sign, for example, was crazy. So Beverly's never been paid. Beverly has just recovered from a very serious knee injury. This is his opportunity, one opportunity to shine in the sun. And I, pun that right over to the fact that I think the Phoenix Suns are the team that are really interested in him.
The Phoenix Suns. Makes a lot of sense next to Devin Booker.
They have like about $15 million in space. Is that, I don't have that
about,
right.
About with Oubre still on the books. It's about that.
Okay. Phoenix Suns, let's say they fly to Patrick Beverley's home and James Jones and Jeff Bauer and Devin Booker are in Patrick Beverley's living room at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sunday.
Is the goat in the yard? Do they keep him in the yard? Because you can't let the goat in the house because the goat's going to
crap. Was a herd
gonna,
of goats.
The goat's going to crap
somewhere. Was it a herd of goats? Wouldn't it be, that would be the greatest way to lean in ever, would be if you like say, hey, come to Phoenix for a free agent meeting. And like you come in and there's a pen in the corner and there's goats. It would be
goats
like the
wearing
greatest.
The goats wearing a Patrick Beverley jersey.
Kevin Arnovitz is an extremely quality journalist. He's done a lot of incredible stories in his career. He has more stories coming. He's got a story coming he's been working on for a year. I won't give anything away about it that I cannot wait to read. That is a fascinating story. I think that the goats thing that he wrote about the Suns, his whole career may come down to that anecdote, was the goats and the Suns. But let's say Patrick Beverley is receives the or at the very least they could like come in wearing goat hats like Adam Sandler back in the day.
Yeah, there you go.
And so okay, what does he do? Like, he's being offered potentially $15 million a year. Who knows how many years. Can he sit around and wait for the Clippers to see if they strike out or hey, just hang on to your cap hold. Maybe we'll use it. Like, this is a timing thing. Like, if they don't get Kawhi or Durant or whomever they're going after, they really are going to want Patrick Beverley back. But Patrick Beverley can't sit around.
Patrick Beverley should be beholden to nobody. He should go get paid. He should take his money. You should not. This is... You can't. Teams are going to do what's best for teams. That's life. It's like they retired Blake Griffin's jersey and then they traded him. Like, this is like, that's
you, right.
That's life. go get your money. Don't sit there and wait, because if they get what they want, all of a sudden your cap hold's gone and your bird rights are gone. And that offer that could exist, maybe some scenario, because I agree with you. If they don't get Kawhi, well, they have Patrick Beverley's bird rights. They have Jamichael Green's bird rights. Those are good players. And I don't think they will ever – I don't think they'll tank. I think they'll try to remain competitive and hope that their young players improve. And I just don't quite know what that looks like and what needs they will prioritize in that sort of plan B scenario, whether it's shooting or another center. Because Harrell – they have Zubats's restricted free agency rights too. They'll need a lot of stuff.
Yeah, do you know in Major League Baseball was it the Cardinals that, now I'm going to make a fool of myself. Who had the password?
I believe it was the Cardinals.
The Cardinals had the password.
Maybe it was the Astros. I don't know. It was a baseball team. Let's just say it was a Major League Baseball team.
All right. So they had the password and they were like breaking into the computer to look at their stuff because like somebody left. Like the Lakers, I know that they don't have like a hugely deep front office, but they need to hire somebody to break into the Clippers offices and find out what the Clippers plan B is and then use that as their plan A.
First of all, the Lakers password is definitely just password or like Lakers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
17 titles or whatever, 16 titles.
The Clippers password, maybe it's Ira. Maybe they made it balls with a Z. And
oh my God, that was a great line. Because the Clippers, they have to have a couple of different options, because even if, let's say the Clippers get Kawhi on Tuesday, they're going to have other things that they're going to have to do with their space. And, I'm sure knowing the Clippers, I'm sure that's all been thought out to the nth degree. But the one thing that I think that you're going to, that you would hear from the Clippers, you are hearing from the Clippers, is we have to have patience. We have to have patience. And, you know, free agency is a game of chicken, about pulling the trigger, especially on timing. And they may have to be patient and patient themselves right out of some guys, because, who was it? Was it Haynes? Who reported that the Clippers meeting was Tuesday with Kawhi?
I can't remember.
Somebody reported that to me made me worried for the Clippers, because if Kawhi is setting up meetings for 3 days, that leads me to believe that it could be some time. You know,
yeah.
They got to decide till Wednesday or Thursday, and by Thursday, Zach, the majority of the market could be closed on the players the Clippers want. That was very concerning to me if I was a Clippers fan. Even if Kawhi says yes, it's still a little bit disconcerting.
Well, we'll see. The Clippers do have a lot of good players, both under contract and with bird rights.
And they have a great front office.
And they have one extremely good young player in Shea and some other interesting pieces. So they'll be all right. It's interesting that we have just not heard a lot of what is the plan B. All right, Wendy, you got to go do your actual job. Look for Brian's stuff. Listen to the Hoop Collective podcast, which is a great podcast, and he has a rotating cast of characters on there. And we'll look for whatever notes column you got coming up. I will eagerly devour. And then on Sunday at 6 p.m.
Who knows what will happen by then.
Yeah, and Sunday at 6 p.m., baby. Let's go. Brian Windhorst, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Zach. We'll talk to you soon.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.